Okay, great. I always like to remind people that if you're on a speakerphone, try to either have the room quiet or on your mute. And we also asking people to also do not put us on hold, because we've had a couple of sessions at the end of last year where we were getting music, and it's very hard to talk above music. So just those words of caution. We like to keep the lines open, though, so that everyone can break in. These are very informal discussions for anyone who's new. Of course, we do these every 2 weeks, and we're starting our 14th round, our 14th cycle. And we get together every other Wednesday. So every other Wednesday, same time, same place, same call-in. And we have these informal discussions. We follow them up with the post-session notes. And, of course, you get plenty of reminders. If for some reason we have two lists that we use, one is a listserv that goes out to a broader audience, and then the other one is our special PLC list. And the people who get the PLC notes are the ones on the PLC list. So for some reason, if by the weekend you don't get session notes, you could just email me, msenyu@aol.com, or GLOW, GHANNE at EICC.edu, and we'll make sure you're on it. If you're getting these, you're on automatically, and if you want to get off, you just have to say remove. But as I said, we're going to be doing this for this session every other Wednesday, 2 to 2:30. But the difference this time, and different times of the year, we do different things. We do strategies. This tranche, we're going to be talking to different grantees. So everyone's going to have a chance to highlight their program and talk about what they're doing. And the whole idea here is to try to exchange ideas, see what other people are doing, and see if it's something that we could use in our program, or if we haven't submitted yet, to get a feel for what other people are doing. We always start out with news from Washington. So, GLOW, any news this week?
Yeah, actually, I talked to Rachel this morning at headquarters. She wanted me to let everybody know that for the 2016 EWDJT competition, the review process is underway and will continue during March and April, with announcements anticipated to be made in May. So that was good news. It sounds like they're all very, very busy, so trying to rate everybody's proposal. But that was all that she had for me to pass on to you guys today. The other thing that I wanted to mention was the HMTRI is now doing a bi-monthly newsletter, which I put out on the listserv at the end of January. This first issue just is a description of all of the areas of technical assistance that we provide to brownfield stakeholders. This is going to be, like I say, a bi-monthly newsletter. What we anticipate having in that in future issues are articles related, any kind of articles related to environmental job development and training, or we may feature stories from or about some of the grantees, just about anything. So if there's a topic that you want to see featured, or if you want to contribute an article to the newsletter, which we are calling Connect News. Connect is the name of the cooperative agreement that we're working under right now. So if you have anything like that you want to see in the newsletter, please send me an email. Mike just gave my email address, but it's, again, ghanne@eicc.edu. These newsletters are also going to be archived on the Brownfields Toolbox. So if you go to the home page and look along the top, click on the Latest News tab, and the newsletters will all be archived there. That's it from me, Mike.
Okay. A reminder, all PLC members are also going to be invited to our annual all-grantee meeting. And you can mark your calendar. The meeting itself is August 17th and 18th, with travel on the 16th to the 19th. And the hotel is paid for by EPA through our cooperative agreement, you'd have to be able to get there. For those of you who are not grantees, for new grantees, or if for some reason, if you submitted and were not accepted, you're still invited to the grantee conference. In fact, it's a really good idea because the next round will be next November for resubmission of new proposals. So I would strongly mark that down on your calendar, and we're going to be talking about it as the time gets closer to that. A couple of quick things, and I'll put these in the notes. Just to let you know, there is a Brownfields bill. It's in Congress. It's called H.R. 4463. It's a reauthorization. The Brownfields bill has not been reauthorized for quite a few years, so it's just been kind of in limbo. The Senate proposed an act called the Build Act. The House has introduced the bill that's now introduced in the House on the 2nd of February. And it's H.R. 4436 if you want to see it. We're not sure yet how much it's going to impact training. I think the word with EPA, I think they would like to see it fairly general so that they can look at their priorities. And the way these acts work is the Congress has to authorize EPA to do these things. And then, of course, the appropriations committees, the authorization committees write the bills, and then the appropriation committees provide the money. So some up to now, Maddie has been really fighting for this program, and it seems to be funded at the levels they feel are good. And so it's not too big, and it's a lean program, and they've been tremendously supportive of what we're doing. So we're just going to keep our eye on the Build Act and the H.R. 443 and let you know what's going on. But all is well so far, and we anticipate a re-up for those who are current grantees. And at the same time, a request for proposals probably November, just like last year. It'll be a repeat. So we'll be talking about what you need to do to get your programs going. But the good thing to do is to start laying the groundwork right now, see what other people are doing, keep informed, come to the annual meeting. Another thing I'm going to do before I introduce Jonathan is just, and I'll put this in the newsletter, in the notes, is a shout-out to Arch Shanks with Cypress Mandela. He was selected and received a Jefferson Award. It's a national award for outstanding individuals helping their communities. And it was presented, the organization was founded by Jacqueline Kennedy to reward on a national basis those very, very outstanding people who have done a lot. And, of course, those of you who have been around to know about Art, and hopefully we'll get him on the call next week to talk about what he's doing in terms of his community, tracking his participants for life, actually, working with unions. And he's just expanded into quite a big facility that he's doing quite well. So we hope to have him talk about his program. Well, they are in the review process for those of you who have submitted, and I think as far as we know, everyone is on track, if not a little ahead of schedule. So the schedules that we've talked about in terms of review and approval of these, anyone who has submitted a proposal is on track. So what I would suggest, though, it's very important that you contact anyone that's in your proposal. This is a very important thing to do now. There is a chance that they might be called. If there's any way that anyone you mention, whether they're a partner or whether you've put their name, certainly if you put their name as a reference or they have their phone number or name, and just as a courtesy, I would touch base with them, let them know the schedule, let them know they're in the review process. Those people who have not maintain are not qualified, have been knocked out by this time, you're going into the review process. As I said, there might be a chance that they will be contacted. So make sure that they're on board. Just let them know that you're in the process. Awards probably in May or so, pretty much per the schedule we've been indicating, and that you have all intents on going forward with this program. So just a reminder at this point in time. If nothing else, just a quick email to them. Well, I would like to, I think this is really timely, one of our grantees, Jonathan, Kathleen, and Lowell from Mott Community College, they were in the class of 2013, I believe, when you got your award, and it's been an interesting ride for them, I guess, in a lot of ways. I remember when we talked to them last year, there had been a change of personnel, and Jonathan took up the torch and has run with this. And Jonathan, with that, I'm going to let you tell us about your program, how things are going, what's happening up in Flint these days. We all know the background. How are you doing?
Okay. Well, again, Jonathan Jarrett, Mott Community College, and there's my condenser. I apologize. We're in our conference room is next to our boiler room, so we get noise from time to time. So I apologize in advance for the embarrassment of that. Nevertheless, my community college here in Flint, Michigan, yes, that Flint, Michigan, that's been in the news. So we anticipate being able to provide some additional training, hopefully under some additional grant awards for water purification and cleanup there. But we're operating now under a Brownsfield grant, and we are in our third year of that grant, which was designed to provide training for persons to do some of the Brownsfield cleanup as a result of the great work here in this area by General Motors that laid the foundation for so much of what has come of Flint, Michigan. So at my community college, we operate this grant out of our Workforce and Career Development Division, and we really approach training and our participants from the perspective of having them be lifelong learners. And sort of the reason I wanted to share that statement and in particular is because of the approach that it causes us to take by way of follow-up, both from the placement perspective as well as continuing education. The significance of that is whereas this program provided sort of targeted instruction around environmental cleanup for those that, for some that have taken the program or the training, they've come back to us for some additional or some follow-up training in maybe related fields that provided for them some employment opportunities beyond just the brownfield cleanup. So again, we're year three of the grant. And we were, the way the grant was written, we were to have three cohorts of participants go through this training, one each year. So in sort of, you know, being year three now, and they had a targeted location for the work to be done initially when we had the big kickoff back in, I want to say fall of 2012 or so. There was the Chevy in the Hole, or the Chevy Commons as it's now called, site that they were going to be working on. And there are several phases of that development that will transpire, but it's not necessarily happening, being rolled out year after year. So phase two is not going to immediately follow phase one and give our participants the opportunity to utilize their training in those consecutive years as we might have thought originally. So one thing that it makes us to really think about now is, okay, what could we have done maybe differently? And one of the things that we sort of came to is we probably would have, or we would look at the training calendar and schedule a little bit differently. As opposed to doing just one program a year or one training cohort a year, we probably would have front-loaded our training sessions and offered them earlier while we knew projects were happening at that site in phase one, as opposed to hoping that phase two would generate additional opportunities for the cohorts to follow. So that's one thing that we sort of, like I say, year and a half later, 2 years later, we say, hi, we might should have maybe looked at that a little bit differently. One of the other challenges that doing one cohort a year presented for us was recruitment, for lack of a better word, issues, meaning it can be easy when you're only going to do one cohort a year to sort of let 7, 8, 9 months of the year get by you without being very active in recruitment. And one thing we are realizing, even for some of our other programs, is that recruitment has to be perpetual. It has to be ongoing, even if you are months away from training. You need to get people in the door, thinking about your training, not necessarily having them put off their life to wait for it, but at least that they have you in mind for as such time as training comes about. They're identifying how they're going to be able to either work around the training to make the training work for them or, you know, opt out. But one thing that we realize is that we cannot wait until, you know, 3 months or 2 months before the training session to start the recruitment process. We have a wonderful curriculum laid out, and what it allowed, again, challenge being now some of the participants or the participants that are in cohorts now may not get that same work experience in Brownfield that we had hoped. But what we've really done a good job at doing is identifying how some of the credentialing especially is going to be transferable to maybe some other placement opportunities. One thing that we did with a cohort, with our second cohort, is a lot of those persons were able to take some of that, some of those credentials and use, in particular, the Hasswhopper 40. They were able to take that credential and gain employment opportunities in deconstruction, demolition, and cleanup in that regard. And it wasn't necessarily at the Brownsfield site, but they were able to use those credentials and obtain placement opportunities in, call it, related fields. I was given a list of like five things to speak to, and I found myself saying, if, and I definitely do not want to come across as this being or having been a program of regrets and missed opportunity. I really want to share that, you know, for younger programs, to maybe throw some things out there that maybe you thought about, and if you haven't, you know, these are things that we thought about, but we thought about them maybe a day or two after the fact, when we could have best utilized the information or the knowledge. Entering into year three, entering into training or having participants in training now, another thing that we have identified is as a definite better practice and best practice is to remain in contact with those that were written into the grant, either as grant partners and or gave letters of support, as well as in our area anyway, with the Brownsville grant, we received a training grant, but there was also EPA dollars that were sent for the project, for the work site itself. So to make sure that, you plug in with other EPA grantees in your immediate area, even if they're not necessarily on your grant, but there probably are some other EPA grant dollars in your area where to be in partnership and or in contact with those grantees will benefit your program and the program participants. It's been a while. Last year around this time we did the same session, and I don't know if as far as me just talking, I could probably talk for a little bit longer yet, but if there are questions, I guess I can stop here and field those if that's appropriate, and or sort of conclude by saying this has been a wonderful opportunity for us as an institution to work in collaboration with EPA and to provide opportunity for the residents of our area in making a difference in the neighborhoods in which they live.
Great. Jonathan, you brought up some really important and good issues. One is the whole issue of change. One thing about this grant is you have to almost have the whole plan down before you even get the grant. And those of you who are contemplating writing one or have written one or in the process of that know this too well. You almost have to have the whole grant. It's almost like a program plan. So when you get the grant, it's all laid out. But then what happens when you kind of get, I don't want to use the word sucker punch, but all of a sudden the reality sets in between the time when the planning was done and when your feet meet the ground, all of a sudden you've got a totally different situation as you have, and you need that flexibility. Fortunately, the grant does allow for change. Did you have to work much with your regional coordinator at all, Jonathan, or how did that work out?
Embarrassingly, not as much as I should have. Uh-huh. And that's one thing that I will say as definitely me soliciting to other programs. They truly are our friends. They want to see us succeed, and they're willing to be a resource if we allow them to be. I haven't been working with my officer as much as I should or could, and I do feel for those that are willing to listen and hear me and do, what do they say, do as I say, not as I do?
Yep.
Yeah, do as I say and be in contact, not necessarily as I have done.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've learned some interesting lessons, and you know, and I hope, and I suppose that's an institutional decision, you're probably up for a re-up or thinking about that, or we're not thinking about that, and I wouldn't want to put you on the spot. But I with the whole water supply issue, and there might be $50 or $60 million coming into your community. It seems like there might be some interesting opportunities, and particularly one of the things that does qualify under the job training grant is a water supply. You know, the grant restrictions this year have been pretty severe in terms of wanting to have certain topics at a certain funding level. And we did directly ask Joe, you know, is water considered one of those brownfields issues? And he said, yes, we would consider water training as one of those. Wastewater is a little different than water. The wastewater program is a fairly large program in terms of wastewater treatment plants, and there is about $55,000 that was contributed. There might be more this next winter for the next go-around, but the water, when we asked him, would that be considered in that $3 million that they allocate? He said, yes, it would. So I'm not sure of your plans. Are you thinking of re-upping, or have you got any thoughts yet, or is it too early?
I have not been brought in the loop on exactly how or what we're going to do as far as re-upping here. I do know that we had a divisional just staff meeting earlier this week, and around the whole water crisis here in Flint, one of the things our executive dean did mention is that we are looking into what between credentials and skills they feel will be needed for persons in the area to have so that they can, you know, work on job sites, particularly in, you know, in and under Section 3 type funding, where, you know, those, a lot of those federal and government awards require Section 3 eligible workers or both companies and individuals to be Section 3 qualified at a certain level.
Mm-hmm. And of course, and I don't know about the sampling part of it, but it and the involvement, but the, it sounds like they were doing incredible amounts of sampling in your community. By that time, they may have already gone beyond that phase of the whole water issue, but it certainly is something that might fit into exactly what OSWER is doing in the Environmental Workforce Program. Who is doing the sampling now, or do they have, I'm sure you've got teams from all over coming in.
At this point, I know that there have been some awards around certain aspects of contracting here locally, but I cannot honestly say I know exactly who's doing that portion as now.
Another thing that happened, and this happened in Alaska. We remember the old Valdez. This is quite many years ago. But after that, we also encouraged grantees and non-grantees who are doing training to look at and perhaps even talk to the Attorney General's office. There's two groups you want to talk to. The mayor's office is definitely one, because money flows through the mayor's office on block grants, and they love to link up with schools and nonprofits in the community, and the money flows through there, and often a tremendous opportunity has come through his office where there's discretionary funding, or just the fact that he wants to bring on local organizations from a visibility point. But the other thing is the Attorney General's office. There are often fines and levies associated with these things, and how that comes down, of course, is yet uncertain, but many of those fines and levies go to educational institutions or are earmarked for education, particularly environment. For example, in Alaska, there was a tremendous and millions of dollars that were earmarked for environmental education as a result of the oil spill. And of course, we have that issue in Louisiana. Sometimes it's diverted to other programs, unfortunately, but the fact that you know that if you're on their list and they know that you exist, it's a go-to place if they find that there might be some training money earmarked in levies and fines, and they have an opportunity to say, well, we have someone here that's got their feet on the ground, they're shovel ready to go, we just need those funds to be allocated to them. It might be a tremendous opportunity, even aside from the EPA work that we're talking about. And of course, the Brownfields Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program, we look at it as a leveraging opportunity in many of our programs, whether it was Jobs for Youth or New Jersey Youth Corps. They use this program as an intro into much bigger fish, and they were allowed them to get their word out. What they were doing became known in the community as a go-to place, and they were able to get substantially more funds from other sources, so they didn't even need the EPA work anymore. And it's something to always keep your eyes open. You never can tell. So anyone out there that have questions of Jonathan or his group? Okay.
Jonathan, hey, Mike, it's Joe. I had a question.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
I'm good. I wanted to ask if any trainees were actually placed at the Chevy in the whole site, and if so, if you could provide information about that to the EPA. And I know you're considering potentially reapplying in the future, but I just want to stress to you and to other grantees that might be on the line to make sure that you've reported, because if you're not reporting, it's definitely going to weigh down if you reapply. But I appreciate you participating, and I found the information you provided interesting. Thanks.
I want to give out a shout out to Joe. He has been our defender, our guidance person, the person that has kept this program vibrant, and he will be changing jobs. So I think that Glow alluded to the fact that Rachel and EPA will be taking over some of those functions. But Joe, as all of our grantees, is always welcome and an alumni to our program. So, Jonathan, you got a heads up from our previous defender. Hope you stay in the game.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Anyone else? Jonathan, is one thing we always ask people, and it was a great presentation. Is it okay if any of our participants get in touch with you and talk to you about your program, or want to talk to you about some of your experiences? We'd really appreciate that if it's okay.
I'd welcome those calls or contacts.
Okay. Well, thanks again. And thank you for everyone on the call. And we're going to convene again, same time, same place, in 2 weeks. So that's March 2nd. And hopefully we're going to have Art Shanks talk about his program in terms of what he's doing out at Cypress Mandela out in Oakland, and how he's doing both recruitment, working with unions, and going to court for some of his participants and helping them stay in the program. Okay, well, thanks, everybody. And if there's no other questions, we'll talk to you soon. Good couple of weeks.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.